You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening, I'm Al Vohner, and this is this week's edition of The Public Eye. Nice to have you all with us this week. So many people are enamored, and certainly it brings plenty of joy, the arts I'm talking about, whether it's hand painting, whether it's a book written, whether it's a production of a play, a movie, whatever it is, the arts really do bring comfort and I guess a sense of departure for many people from the stress and the strife of everyday life. But within the art community, there's a lot of racial bias. That was even unbeknownst to myself until recently. So this week we decided to bring Brent Morden. He's the director of Fair in the Arts, an organization that works diligently to eradicate and to bring to light racism, insults, discrimination, stereotypes, all types of bias within the arts community. So for the next half hour, we'll be talking with Brent and getting a sense of why this is happening, how long it's been happening, and what's being done to curtail it. Brent, nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Al. Great to be on. I appreciate your time, and let's have a good conversation here.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I guess I even consider, well, radio, television, movie production, painting, sculpture, writing, Broadway plays, local plays, movies. I mean, all of that comes under that umbrella of the arts. And from time to time we hear about, somebody being unethical, somebody being not true to their form and being difficult to work with. But after listening to some of the reports that I noticed and visiting your website, I get the sense that it goes a lot further. And as I said at the opening monologue, racism, insults, discrimination, stereotypes, you would think that people are partaking in something very creative. It's relaxing. It's something that brings joy. All I can focus on is, bringing this to light, bringing it to an audience so that they'll be, they can forget about everyday stress, as I talked about. But it sounds like, the things that average Americans or average people around the globe complain about, whether it's in their workplace or other place, is also affecting the arts community, right?
Absolutely, Al. Yes, and you're right that arts, all of these different art forms you describe, film, dance, music, theater, these are all beautiful expressions of our humanity and storytelling that highlight what it means to be human and helps to highlight our common humanity. And for millennia and centuries, that's served to create beauty in the world, to tell stories, and to bring people together. And you're right that over the last several years especially, there's been this concerning trend in the arts and also institutions more broadly that it's a new belief system asking us to abandon the standard of non-discrimination and emphasizing our humanity first and instead assessing people and artists based on their skin color or gender or sexuality or other immutable characteristics. And I'm happy to go into more detail about the case of Kevin Ray, how that's emblematic of this larger trend in the arts, and some other examples.
Yeah, now Kevin Ray, as you said, probably one example, but certainly one that stands out because of what he has endured, what he may be enduring as we speak. But let's talk about him, because this is a real person, somebody within the arts community who experienced firsthand racism and all types of bias. And I got to imagine, Brent, that it does a number on your creativity, right? If you have to fight off people who are being aggressive, verbally or otherwise, and in a discriminatory fashion, that it takes a lot of your focus away from concentrating on, what you really want to do and what you do best, which is your art form. But let's talk about him for the start.
Sure. To preface and to introduce Kevin Ray, I'll just introduce the context a little bit. So I work with an organization called FAIR, which stands for the Foundation Against Intolerance and Racism. And what we are is a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that's dedicated to advancing civil rights and liberties for all individuals and to promoting a common culture that's based on fairness, understanding, and humanity. And a big part of why FAIR emerged is because we saw this increasing need to fulfill advocacy for individuals like Kevin Ray who are being threatened or persecuted for their speech or who are held to a different set of rules for language or conduct simply on the basis of their skin color or ancestry or other immutable characteristics. And we saw this play out with Kevin Ray. Kevin Ray is he's a theater artist. He's a director and actor, educator in New York City, who I've gotten the opportunity to meet over the last year or so. I'm also based in New York City, where it's a big theater town. Kevin was working for an organization called New 42, which is a publicly funded organization that curates arts programs, arts education and enrichment programs in New York, and they have a network of teaching artists they send out to teach kids about the arts, which is a wonderful thing. And it's, I think arts education is an incredible, beautifully enriching thing. Beginning in 2019, the work environment at New 42, this publicly funded organization, was becoming increasingly permeated with insults and stereotypes and as outright discriminatory remarks based on skin color in the name of what they were calling anti-racism. And Kevin noticed this. He noticed that employees were being segregated based on their skin color in workplace meetings and diversity training sessions. He noticed that, quote, placing white folks in interracial dialogue is like placing pre-algebra students in a calculus class, is what some of his colleagues were saying. Another quote includes that white behavior is characterized by, quote, not listening or defensiveness or lack of inquiry. Overall, a set of really divisive and vile stereotypes on the basis of race that Kevin felt was destroying his relationships with his colleagues. It was creating a tense workplace environment that distracted him as an artist from focusing on the work, focusing on providing the best quality, enriching, fun, exciting theater education to his kids. And it was not right. So he spoke up. He sent a letter to HR. And you would think that they would respond by saying, we are shocked by what you're experiencing and we'd like to address this and cultivate an encouraging work environment that is not going to divide people based on race. But instead, they doubled down. They hired an attorney to investigate the case. And Kevin came to FAIR. He reached out to me initially, and I helped him get set up with FAIR's legal network. One of our advocacy pillars is that we have a legal network. We provide support to people who are facing persecution based on their speech or other characteristics. We're defending people's civil liberties. And then, thankfully, we're pleased to have reached a settlement in this case. But Kevin's situation is one of many, unfortunately. And that's part of the reason we exist, is to create a support network and space for people who want to see a better vision for culture in the arts, a vision that puts our humanity at the center of what we do rather than seeing each other on the basis of group characteristics first. And I'm happy to give more examples and speak about the work that we're doing, whatever you'd like to learn about today.
Well, Brent, the other... As I'm listening to you, the other thing that struck me was the fact that New 42, as you said, was publicly funded. This is not a privately held organization. Public dollars are flowing into this. You would think that over time, contributors or, you know, board of directors, as you said, even within the organization, the management, HR, somebody would have stepped up to the plate and said, hey, look, you know, we're outreaching the public in more than one way, not only through the arts, but certainly our part of our funding mechanism. Our reputation is at stake here. It almost sounds like nobody really cared. And it was like, you know, if Kevin Ray has a problem, so be it. If he's not happy, let him, you know, let him walk. And, you know, we can always find somebody else. And I didn't, you know, to be honest with you, Brent, and I want to get your sense on this. I always think of the arts, television, motion picture, painting, sculpture, everything that comes under that umbrella that we talked about, being very more liberal, more open-minded, because there's such a high degree or high level of creativity involved in that. You can't say one person's art is no good next to another. It's all personal expression. So I'm a little surprised, and I want to get your sense. When Kevin came forward on this, is this something that is pretty much widespread throughout art communities across the country?
Sure, that's a great question. And yes, I agree with your observation that the arts and artists have a personality trait of creativity and openness, which is associated with being more liberal and open-minded, right? And unfortunately, over the last few years, what I and many others have noticed is that there's this increasingly prevalent bias in, for example, grant-giving organizations or commission opportunities or organizations that are producing concerts or funding films to focus on the identity, perceived group identity of the individuals as the basis for determining the value of their art or if they should be programmed or funded rather than the merit of the artwork or the story that the individual has to tell. And they're doing it in the name of what they call diversity, equity, and inclusion, which on its face, these terms, they sound good. And I think if they're taken at face value, then a humanistic universal approach to diversity and inclusion could be relatively non-controversial. Over the last several years, especially, and mostly since 2015, when a lot of these belief systems and cultural trends came to a head, starting on college campuses, I saw much of this myself, having been an undergraduate in the 2010s on campus. And all these ideas of diversity, equity, and inclusion were becoming perverted to serve certain ideological goals that did not reflect a real, true, universal idea of diversity. But people were going along with it because there was this increasing, this mentality that as organizations, we have to combat racism or reverse systemic discrimination or white supremacy, however they defined it. A lot of this trend that we notice in grant-giving organizations, in arts institutions, Hollywood, Broadway, really came to a climax of sorts in 2020, which was namely the summer of 2020 after the murder of George Floyd. There was a lot of tension in American society, especially, and a lot of reckoning. People were saying that this is the moment to stand up for the marginalized and oppressed in our society. One example of that I'll give you, because I like to give concrete examples, is in the summer of 2020, a collective of theater artists came together and assembled this website and manifesto called We See You, White American Theater. And essentially, they wrote an essay and a list of demands arguing that theater has been based on white supremacy for the longest time and that it's time to radically overhaul it and now is the time to uplift what marginalized voices, however they define it, which is not very well defined usually in these situations. And for them, what that includes is setting racial quotas for boards or for cast or for creative teams. That calls for having grievance sessions with members of the community who would identify as marginalized. And so this memo, this website circulated, was signed by a lot of theater artists because it was seen to be a show of virtue, that you're doing something good, you're standing up for the oppressed in society, returning to this idea of artists having a more liberal mindset. And I think that's what's kind of bringing it home. That's what's so pernicious about this belief system, that it it sounds like it's coached in the language of inclusion and non-racism and anti-discrimination. And that's why it's so easy for people to go along with that, and it's hard for people to question it like Kevin Ray did, because a lot of the time it really is discriminatory. And we at FAIR are calling it out respectfully and tactfully and showing that there is a better alternative, mm-hmm. which is the seeing each other as human beings first, fundamentally. Using that as the basis for experiencing art and for funding art and creating art, which at the end of the day is a reflection of our humanity in its infinite complexity.
Yeah, you would think that would be crystal clear in most people's minds, but obviously not. I do want to take just a quick pause to remind listeners, especially if you're just joining us, that this is The Public Eye on 90.5 WICN. I'm Al Voney, your host. My guest this week is Brent Morden, Director of FAIR in the Arts. He's the Managing Director of an organization that is bringing to light cases of racism and discrimination and stereotyping of all types within the arts community, whether it's musical Broadway, as Brent has been talking about, the movie industry, the arts, sculpting, painting, writing, any place where creative minds come together. And as I said earlier on, and Brent has done a good job of shedding light, that even an industry that has been thought to be very open-minded, very welcoming of all types of people from various backgrounds and belief systems, even there, discrimination and stereotyping has been pretty prevalent. Brent, you know, it's funny because, again, for so long, well, I want to go back to something else that you said. It was so interesting. The George Floyd, I thought... You talked about college campuses. Well, I think I got a few years on you. I don't want to get into age, but I do remember back during the Vietnam War, it was college campuses across this country, whatever the reason, whether you were for the war, against the war, and also civil rights issues. And I thought, wow, I've never seen anything like this. Yeah, I was a young boy, a teenager. And so on and so forth, we've seen this take place time and time again. And each time you say to yourself, I think we've turned a corner here. No, we're not going to win everybody over, but I think just to get people on the same page that you may not agree with someone, you may not like someone, but you know what? You've got to learn that we're all on this planet together. No one is any better than the next person. But, you know, after you know, delving into this story, once again, it proves that here we are in the year 2023, and it's still happening. But more importantly, when you guys get involved, when FAIR gets involved, I know you said you want to try and do this as, you want to do this in a manner, in a professional manner. Have there been people that have had to resign? I mean, have there been finger pointing? Has there been cases where individuals were singled out for being the, you know, being the individual or department that has been spreading these, you know, this form of racism and stereotyping? Has anybody had to? Has anybody's head been on the chopping block?
Sure. In terms of departments or college campuses or organizations, or more broadly,
I think just more broadly. I mean, you know, you go, like Kevin came forward to you guys and said, "Look, I've tried everything. I've written to human resources.
Right.
They're giving me the closed door. Like, oh, hey, don't worry about it. You know, this thing's happened. Just go about your business." Well, that's easier said than done. If you can't focus completely 100% on what you're doing or your work, if every time you go to work or the environment has got this kind of toxic atmosphere. So, you know, when you do get involved, I mean, obviously, Brent, what I'm saying is somebody, regardless of the part of the arts industry, no matter whether it's film or writing or anything, when these cases come to the forefront to you, somebody must be held accountable, otherwise we don't move forward. So have there been cases where you've had to, your organization or the legal team has had to actually pinpoint an individual or staff member or part of an organization that has been the, you know, really the problem, and by virtue of highlighting this and bringing it to light, they no longer exist within that organization, and you can move forward.
Yes, yes. A big part of FAIR's legal work and our advocacy is that when we are presented with cases that people come to us that they're experiencing a hostile work environment, or they're experiencing discrimination on the basis of their immutable characteristics, what FAIR does is we determine if this is how to tackle this, first of all, if it merits an amicus brief, if it is a legal matter, or otherwise if it merits an open letter of sorts urging a school department, for example, or an organization to reconsider their approach. Cases in which we've done this, a few instances, is that FAIR, we have sent legal letters to Brown University, to De Anza College in California. The case with Brown University is that they were hosting, I think they were planning to host a class in an upcoming semester that was specifically designated for people of color. And this was open discrimination on the basis of skin color that should not be tolerated at a college, at a university. And so FAIR sent a legal letter explaining that this is a violation of civil rights, and the department at Brown thankfully reversed course. Mm. That was an example of real world impact we've had. Another recent example is there was a professor at De Anza College named Dr. Tabia Lee, who was experiencing, I believe she was a diversity director of sorts there, and she had a very humanistic approach to diversity that we like to emphasize at FAIR. She was experiencing a work environment that told her, for example, she was not black enough to talk about diversity or the experience of marginalized people. She was facing stereotypes based on skin color, and I believe she was let go from her position and came to FAIR for legal support, which we provided her, and were able to send a letter to De Anza College, create a media campaign to raise awareness of this issue. So returning to your question of who's actually responsible for dictating this new ideology or belief system that is actually intolerant and illiberal that we see in the arts and other institutions, there are certain individuals who we can pinpoint. In Kevin Ray's case, for example, there was a diversity consulting organization that was brought in. I'm not remembering the exact name right now, but there are organizations that have diversity consultants who are brought into corporations, institutions, schools to dictate some of these ideas. I remember when I was in school, I went to Columbia University, and I remember going through as an RA, a resident advisor, some trainings hosted by consultants that the university hired. We went through a microaggression seminar. We went through some trainings about identity, and we went through trainings about LGBTQ issues, which felt that it felt like there were certain ideas being imposed on us that we didn't necessarily was not necessarily relevant to our job or to the mission of the university to challenge norms. Yeah. And to expose us to new ideas and to actually encourage us to think with an open mind at being taught how to think, not what to think.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and I don't mean to cut you off. It's just that we're closing down on time. But it does sound like, you know, when FAIR is called into the picture, you do a thorough overview of what's happening, pinpointing where it's coming from, and without raising sabers, as they say, identifying the problem, notifying the organization. Hey, look, you know, you need to take light of this. And do something about it, and then I guess based on the response that you get, but it sounds like people are in tune. They're hearing what you're having to say, and they're making the necessary changes. While we've got a few moments left, Brent, obviously the work that FAIR does is widespread, I assume nationwide. So there may be cases anywhere, but you know, at least for our listening audience, if people wanted to get more information about you personally, the organization, is there a website or way they can reach out to you?
Absolutely. Our website is fairforall.org. That's the three words, fairforall.org. If you look up FAIR, we're on YouTube, we're on Substack, we publish articles, and we curate videos as well. We have a network of chapters, local grassroots chapters around the United States and the world. If you'd like to learn more about your local chapter, then you'll find that information on fairforall.org. And lastly, I'll also plug FAIR in the Arts, mm-hmm. which is our professional network of artists, arts educators, advocates who are championing ideas and principles of creative freedom and humanity and fairness and excellence in the arts. So that's at fairinthearts.org.
An organization that is working on behalf of people within the arts community, as I said at the outset, regardless of what exactly your talents are, it is a problem, and FAIR is working diligently to put things right, as they say. If you have any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. Brent, real quick, people want to just reach out to you. Do you have an email in case they wanted to pose a question to you directly?
Absolutely. I'm more than happy to speak and answer questions. My name is Brent, B-R-E-N-T, dot Morden, M-O-R-D-E-N, at fairforall.org.
Great. And that way, if people do have questions or just or an issue, Brent, I'm sure, would be more than happy, as he said, to address that and get back to you. Again, I want to thank Brent Morgan, Director of FAIR, for joining us this evening and shedding some light on you know, the racial bias that goes on within the arts community. For the Public Eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much for tuning in. Stay well.